Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, from frigid Lexington, Kentucky.
I'll take it because it's beautiful here, and I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for December 15th, 2010, episode 33, sponsored by Back on Track and Good Morning Horse World.
And in the Leroy, the redneck reindeer looks to the front of the sleigh, delivering toys to all the good old boys.
Did look a lot like Christmas in Santa Maria today. A reindeer on the loose captivated crowds and kept police busy as it pranced its way into a neighborhood.
This reindeer is roaming in a Santa Maria strawberry field.
You don't see this every year in Santa Maria.
A cowboy working in a nearby cattle ranch got a call about the reindeer and came over to see if he could rope her.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, never let you down.
Good morning, Jamie. We are going to have the man who saved Christmas on with us today.
I love it.
He will be here to join us today. Jennifer will tell us a little more about that in a minute. But first, I wanted to say happy birthday to Sandy Sweet Lovato. That's Frankie's sweet wife. Frankie Lovato, of course, has been on the show before. He's our jockey friend, the creator of the Equisizer, which James Savoy was talking about yesterday. So happy birthday, Sandy.
Happy birthday.
And we're going to get right to Jennifer today to tell us what's on today's show, because it's jam-packed full of stuff.
Taco block full of good stuff today. On today's show, as Glenn mentioned, we will get the story straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Reindeer wrangler Bob Aquitapache, and I'm sorry, Bob, if I messed that up, will be here to tell us how he saved Christmas. Had to do with reindeers and urban surroundings. Also, Stephanie from Reeves International, who you know better as the Briar Horse People, will get us all up to date on the latest and greatest models, what the heck they're doing, how the heck they make those things, and most important, where Jamie can get a Zenyatta for less than $100. And it's Wednesday, so Christy's going to be here from thehorse.com along with her best buddy and pal, Dr. Jones, with some fun and interesting vaccine factoids. That's right. Vaccines can be fun and interesting.
Well, it is that time of year, you know, at the end of the year, beginning of the next year, you start thinking about vaccines again.
Yeah, it's always good to know what you need and when you need it. I mean, I think that was the most common question when I worked at the veterinary hospital is, what do I need to give them now? And then which one do I give them later? I can't remember. So it'll be really interesting to get them on and kind of lay to rest any thoughts you might have or any ideas or any questions. Of course, you can always call with your questions at 347-637-3238. But talking a little bit of vaccines, getting some people some education today.
Have you memorized that number yet, Jamie? Because I haven't. I have to look at it every time.
You know what's funny is I start out dialing 634732. No, I haven't memorized it either. So 347-637-3238. It's a good thing it's on the player for the callers, because then you don't have
yes,
to think
is.
About it.
It is on every player out there on all the affiliates.
I tried to make a word out of it, Glenn, and
you
can't do it.
Did you? No.
No, there's no words. Go ahead.
And unfortunately, we were assigned this one, so we couldn't pick one that was a little easier. So
yeah.
That didn't work either. It's just, it is what it is. And, you know, after 10 years, people get used to what it is. And maybe after 10 years, we'll actually remember what it is.
That would be crazy.
Don't forget, you can listen on your iPhone or your Droid just by going to horsesinthemorning.mobi, M-O-B-I, B as in boy, I, like mobile. So that's horsesinthemorning.mobi. You can listen as you're wandering around the barn or at whatever you're doing, for that matter. You can, and Jennifer, we're hearing ringing, so I thought, she can't hear us. So, do you want to let her know that we're hearing ringing? So that'll be good. So anyway, we're getting started today. We have a busy show planned. We're so looking forward to talking to Reindeer Wrangler Bob. There is a video of Reindeer Wrangler Bob actually reining the reindeer. And where this came about is Jamie found a story the other day. Tell us the story again.
Well, it starts out basically, I guess there was in Santa Maria, California, they had a Christmas tree lot, I think is where it started. And I guess for the Christmas tree lot, to try to draw people to come and buy your Christmas trees there, a petting zoo or somebody had some reindeer that were out in the petting zoo, at least one, because the 9-year-old reindeer decided to exit the lot. I guess, you know, in Santa Maria, California, not many people kind of knew what to do about the reindeer that was on the loose, and I guess it was charging through everybody's strawberry fields and running around completely loose. And we're talking, this is a huge reindeer. They're not like little deers in your backyard or something like that. No, this is a reindeer that is monstrous, and it has an entire rack of horns and not the safest situation to be put in. So the reindeer got loose, ran around for 2.5 hours, and what'd they do? They finally called a cowboy to come get it.
I know, and we'll put a link. I'm going to put a link right here on our Facebook page to the video, so people, as we're talking to him, can actually go watch the video. So I'll put a link up to that as well. So we're working on that. And in the meantime, while we're waiting for him to come on, did you see the big news story that Martina Hingis married a equestrian guy? Martina Hingis, of course, the tennis player who was top in the world for so many years. Who's now like 30 years old and was actually suspended for tennis for a couple of years for a positive drug test.
Mm-hmm.
But when I remember watching Martina play so many times. And she married a French show jumper by the name of Theobald Hutin. And I'm sure I messed that up. And he's from Paris, France.
Thibodeau.
So. What is it?
Paris, France, Thibodeau. I'm gonna Google a picture of him and see if we can add him to the 2010 Hottest Horseman of the Year award nominations. So
okay.
We'll see. Let's see what he looks like.
You'll give us a report on that then.
I'm doing it right now. Let's see. No, I don't think he's gonna make it. No.
Thibodeau. Okay. He doesn't make it. All right.
No, but we're still accepting your nominations for the 2010 Hottest Horseman of the Year. I did post it on Facebook so everybody can see who we already have. And I'm still kind of getting caught up from the previous Facebook posts, but you can always send me emails and let me know, jamie@horseradionetwork.com, that's J-A-M-I-E, and let us know because, you know, I'm partial to one particular Best in Breeches of award nominee. So I've posted his picture several times for this kind of thing. And the ladies are swooning, Glenn. They're swooning.
I saw that. They have their favorites already. Well, I think another favorite is going to be our first guest who's on here. And at the expense of messing up your last name, Bob, I'm just going to call you Reindeer Wrangling Bob. And I bet you never in 100 years, Bob, thought you would have that name.
Never. And with a name like Equus Apache, I expect a lot of messed up titles.
I bet you do. Now, this is, did you ever believe that this little story about a little story in California that would go basically all over the horse world, that you would end up someday saving Christmas?
You know, I don't think I saved Christmas, but I do enjoy all the all the teasing that I get from my friends and such.
I bet you do. So now you're just working away at the ranch. Tell us what you do at the ranch. What's your job there?
Well, I was actually doing some day work at a different ranch. I've got one of my own, and I do, you know, odds and ends and other outfits. And my wife had actually called the owner, and his daughter came and caught me and said, your wife needs you really badly.
Oh, and you probably had a heart attack.
Well, yeah, you know, I didn't know, I mean, for her to interrupt, you know, my work or whatever, I mean, it had to be pretty severe and pretty world-changing, and, well, I think it kind of has been, really.
So you got the call that there was a reindeer on the loose, and I think the funniest part is he was running through a strawberry patch, which just adds to the fairy tale of all of this. So there's a reindeer on the loose in a subdivision at this point. Is the call you got?
He was still in the strawberry patch at that point, and on the way over there, I started calling everybody who I knew everybody who could swing a rope that I knew. And anybody who answered just plumb didn't believe me or thought that I was trying to coax them into a bar or, you know how cowboys are.
Yeah.
And, by the time I showed up, it was crazy. News cameras and cops everywhere. It was bananas.
And this poor, what looked like absolutely scared to death reindeer.
Oh, yeah. That poor creature. I mean, I have nothing but sympathy for that poor animal. He had gotten chased around by cops with sirens to people on bikes. Everybody was just chasing him afoot, and it was pandemonium. I mean, pandemonium. It was quite a sight to see.
And there were like hundreds of people watching. I posted the video on our Facebook page so our listeners right now can check it out. But you came on the scene like Roy Rogers came on the scene, and did you end up lassoing it? Is that how you got it?
Yeah, actually, the officers had told me, you know, we were trying to make sure that he stays out of traffic, and fortunately he ran, we probably chased him for three-quarters of a mile, through strawberry fields and such. And he ended up going into that housing tract, and we had chased him through the tract for a while. And finally, honestly, there's footage out there, and there's a kid that's saying, oh, and now Christmas has been saved or something like that, or
yeah.
Now he knows that Santa's real. Well, his garage has been blessed by having this reindeer in there, because that was the only way that we could get close enough to him, is that he ran into the garage, and we were able to kind of keep him hemmed up in there long enough so that I could get a shot on roping it. I mean, he was bouncing off of pool tables and ladders and dishwashers. And, I mean, it was surreal.
That's kind of sad, too. Now, we're a horse show, obviously. We deal with the horse community, so I have to ask you about the horse you were riding. What was it, a quarter horse, and what was the name?
I call her Sparky, and, yeah, she's a quarter horse. And if I've got 8 horses, and coincidentally, that is the one that I would want to have on that particular day. She came second up in a horse race here in town, and she is just gentle, real gentle, is kind of okay with whatever weird positions you put her in, and yeah, this one kind of topped them all, really.
So you get the phone call, and you're on your horse at the time, or did you have to like run and load her up and tack her up and all that kind of on the way, or were you riding? I kind of missed that.
We were actually out at a set of corrals, and I was sorting a bunch of cattle, and that's when I was told to go home, load up, go find your wife. And it wasn't until I actually got on the road, probably half an hour or whatever later, that I got back into cell service, that I was able to get the scoop as to why I had to leave. and I always go off road.
So they say, throw your horse in the trailer. We'll tell you why later. Just get out here to your wife. And you get out there, and you find out there's a reindeer. So obviously your horse had to work pretty hard. How's she doing?
She's doing great. She, fortunately enough, I don't like to keep shoes on horses unless I have to. And with the asphalt and the concrete and such, that probably saved me from falling down a time or two. Not having shoes.
Yeah. I mean, to see you galloping around on the pavement was you know, as a rider, it kind of made me a little bit concerned for a second, like, oh, don't flip. But actually, it looks pretty good. So the no shoes was the key, huh?
Well, it certainly was in my favor anyway. And I was I was petrified of, because I didn't know what a reindeer would do if I was able to rope it. And then, you know, I was jumping over rose bushes and all kinds of stuff that just, well, it was quite a trail horse class anyway.
Extreme trail horse.
Yeah, you're ready for competition trail riding there, Bob. I'll tell you what.
Oh, heck yeah.
What a good pony. Go give her
this
a carrot for
mine. This has to be our story of the year, by the way. I'm just nominating this right now as the story of the year. You're our hero, Bob. This is great. This is just
great. Yay, Bob! And I just want to say that if you do go watch the video, this poor little kid at the end, what I thought when I watched this is, I mean, first of all, Bob, you're amazing. I mean, and your horse is phenomenal. But I'm watching this video, and I guess the little kid that they caught the reindeer, he's like, I don't know, he's got to be 7 or 8 years old, and he's standing out there, and at the end he goes, now, I guess if this can happen, there really is a Santa Claus. I'm like, this poor kid, that is going to follow him around the rest of his life. He's going to be getting married, and they're going to play the clip of him saying that about Santa Claus at his wedding. I mean, the poor guy, that's his 5-15 minutes of fame, is talking about how there really is a Santa. Well, of course there is, little guy, you know, but it's just so funny. I loved it.
Oh, that kid was adorable. He was one of the first ones there. And he came up and he asked all the officers and all that. He said, "Can I pet it?" We're like,
"Oh,
yes." I don't know.
Well, I got to ask. We have to end with. I know you have to run out of here soon, so I do have to add. And we thank you so much for getting up this early to join us. But was the reindeer okay? Everything's okay with the reindeer?
No, he was fine. He was absolutely fine. He's. Went on to a new Christmas tree lot, and everything was fine. He's still happy and probably just eating whatever reindeer eat, and happy as a lark.
And they'll have a little bigger fence up for him this time.
Yeah, I would kind of hope so anyway.
Thank you, Bob, and Merry Christmas. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You guys have
all
a great day,
care.
Won't you?
Have a great day on the ranch, Bob.
You guys too. Thank you.
All right, so that was Reindeer Bob that joined us there. It was so nice of him to come on. What a good sport.
Oh, my gosh, it's just so funny. I mean, you just hear this story, you're like, that can't happen. Really? A reindeer was on the loose? Oh, my gosh. That's so cool.
And they called a rancher, wrangler to come out and get this whole story just is perfect. I'm telling you, it's the story of the year. It's our best story so far and then the fact that Jennifer was able to track him down, actually get a hold of him. I guess she got a hold of him, found out where the wife worked, and then called the wife and then got a hold of him. So she worked hard for this one. So we thank Jennifer for putting that together. That's terrific.
Yeah,
and I did post, if you go to our Facebook page, I posted the link there. You can go watch the video of Reindeer Bob doing his thing.
Yeah, don't mess around, Glenn. Your wife is getting really, really good at stalking people. It's a gift.
I know.
Google is her friend.
She is. Well, this half hour is sponsored by our title sponsor, Back on Track. I had the opportunity to spend some time with Bo, the owner of Back on Track, the other day, and he's committing to another run here with the Horse Radio Network, and we appreciate all his support. So let's take a little break for Back on Track, and we're going to be back then. And speaking about Briars, and I know that they've been a passion of yours since you were little.
Yay!
There's a company that we just love that offers products to improve lifestyle and mobility, and they have been the mainstay in European therapeutic therapies for many years. Plus, they are used and endorsed by many of the top dressage, eventing, and show jumping riders worldwide. We are talking about Back on Track, of course. If you're looking for a quality holiday gift for any horse lover that will truly benefit their horse, then look no further than any of Back on Track's products, including exercise boots, bell boots, saddle pads, sheets, and so much more. You can find all of their products at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com, or give them a call at 888-758-9836. That's 888-758-9836. So now you know why I played all that reindeer music at the beginning of the show.
It's pretty crystal clear now. What a fun story. Yeah, and I cannot believe that you didn't have Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I mean, isn't that the most popular reindeer song?
It is, but it was too obvious. You know, it was almost too obvious for this one. So I had to find more obscure, and Rudolph the Redneck Reindeer is one of my favorite songs, so...
I had never heard that one, amazingly enough. So that was new to me, and I was very interested. And I'm sorry, was that Elvis singing Rudolph the Redneck Reindeer?
No, it wasn't. It was some other group. I don't know where I found that one. You know, YouTube's an amazing thing. You find almost anything on YouTube. So that's kind of where I found that one. Well, now let me ask you. You mentioned the other day that you've been into Breyer since you were a kid.
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we're talking, it's really embarrassing that I'm even going to tell you this story online because I guess every little girl kind of does this, but I had really thick carpeting in my bedroom, and my friend Jessie would always come over, and she would bring her Breyers, and then I would bring my Breyers, and we would outline in the carpet with one of the front legs of the Breyers an arena, and then we would have the horse shows, and we would have jumps, but I wasn't really ready to have, like, real Breyer jumps, and I don't even think they had them then. So we would jump over books and jump over, you know, just about anything we could find. So that is my embarrassing story. I mean, we put leg wraps on them. You know, we did whatever we needed to do to get the Breyers competing. So
That's pretty good. So you were a competitor even then.
Oh, yeah, always a competitor, and I did collect them, and every year it was, you know, which Breyer do you want for Christmas, because I could only get one a Christmas, because otherwise it would be, you know, out of control, and I still have them all, but I must tell you that as a 33-year-old woman, I still have my Man of War and my Secretariat Breyers on a shelf in my bedroom.
Wow, you're pretty dedicated.
I'm committed. So that's why I feel like Zenyatta should be mine to add to the list. But
right.
Do we have Stephanie on the phone right
now? Yeah, she's ready to go.
So.
Yep.
I am here. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephanie. Well,
so,
Stephanie, I have a question for you first. Because I was a guy. I'm a horse husband. I married into this thing 20 years ago. So
how
I missed the
you.
Whole Breyer. Yeah, I know. I missed the whole Breyer thing. And Jennifer used to, my wife who you just talked to, she used to paint Breyers and she used to do all that stuff. So that's about my extent of knowledge of Breyers. How did Breyers start in the first place?
Oh my goodness. Well, back in the day, Breyer Molding Company used to make molded parts for the defense department and knobs for TVs like Zenith and other plastic molded parts in Chicago. And then Master Crafter Clock Corporation had an order from Woolworths, and they wanted a horse to adorn one of their mantelpiece clocks. And it turned out that the horse was much more popular than the clock itself, and Woolworths had gotten requests, and the buyer there wanted to be able to carry the horse alone. And that was in 1950, and that is how Breyer got started with making Breyer Animal Creations, a division of Breyer Molding Company. And we started making horses of all kinds, as well as North American wildlife and a variety of livestock as well. So there was something that was for everyone. And interestingly, a lot of our advertising back in the 50s and 60s points out the attributes of what Briar still is today. It's a toy. It's a collectible. It's an art object, is what the advertising would say back in the 50s. And that's exactly what Briar still is for kids today. They collect them, play with them, customize them, show them. There are just so many activities that someone can get involved with a Briar model horse.
So what was the first Briar you guys put out?
It was called the Western Horse, and it was a standing palomino, and actually had a, as part of the sculpture, it had a molded bridle and breast collar and then a removable saddle. And that was the very first model that we made. And actually, because of one of the other hallmarks of Briar is the quality of the sculpture as well as the quality of our production process and materials, that particular mold is still something that we can use today. And in fact, in 2010, Briar has celebrated its 60th anniversary, and as part of our Briar Fest, which is our annual convention in Kentucky, celebration, we also put one of those pieces, we made it a special one in a test color and put it in our auction. So occasionally we do bring back these horses that we produced, even the very first one that Briar ever produced.
And it's funny you mention that, because I do have a collection of the old Briars, just the one that you're talking about I have. It's probably pretty beat up by now. But that whole kind of collection, a neighbor who was a, I guess, I went to school with his son, and he gave me all his old Briars, and it's that exact model. And I believe that there's a paint one and a palomino one, all kind of exactly the same horse. And then it was kind of a shiny look to it, right?
Right. Well, also, Briar used to occasionally put a very high gloss finish on some of their pieces so that it would replicate like a fine ceramic or fine porcelain. And some of those are some of the most collectible pieces in the collection. And just like you said, people sharing their collections, when we have our event, Briar Fest, which takes place every July in Kentucky. In fact, it'll be our 22nd year in 2011.
And it's crazy at the horse park during Briar Fest.
It's wild. It's just so much fun for any horse lover, because there's tons of horses and there's tons of collecting and all kinds of model horse activities going on. But what it is also is families and generations and people, moms who had Briar when they were kids, and they kept their collections, and now they passed them on to their kids. So we just get, and it's funny, Glenn, you talk about being the horse husband. I mean, we get so many dads who are so cute, because they come down and they're like, you know, they've built the barn that, you know, their daughter is playing with, or, you know, they come and they watch the model horse show and try to understand how to help her, you know, score better in the classes and make sure the tack fits correctly and all that kind of stuff. So it's really, really fun, because it's the parents are involved and the kids love it. And then we also have a lot of adult collectors who are still really, really into it and showing their model horses with the same intensity that a real horse person would use if they were, you know, going to the Quarter Horse Congress. It's really, really fun.
It's a little cheaper to get your horses there, probably.
Yeah, well, I have to say, no vet bills. It's a lot easier to clean up after them. Yeah, the boarding is a little cheaper, too.
Yeah, you don't have to pay for stabling. Yeah, so that was my next question. Because I've never been to a Briar Fest, at Briar Fest, there's actual, like you said, horse shows that go on. I mean, and describe what we see in that.
Sure. Well, what it's all about, and actually, as a kid, I also got into this. So the whole world of Briar is very close to my heart and personal. And I loved horses, but I didn't have a place where I could go ride. So I learned about horses through my Briar models, and this is something that we, of course, encourage at Briar Fest, is to learn all the different disciplines, learn about the tack, how it fits, what conformation is suitable to what discipline. So, for example, if you're showing a model in an Arabian halter class, but you pick a model that perhaps looks more like a cross between an Arabian and a quarter horse or something like that, and doesn't have the breed characteristics that are current in the Arabian world, then you may not place as well. And then also if your model has some rubs, you know, and hasn't really been taken care of, then you won't place as well. And in performance competition,
it's just like the real shows.
It is. Well, and in performance, it's all about capturing a frozen moment in time. So, for example, if you're doing a jumper class, let's say, first of all, you have to have the English saddle that fits correctly and the girth in the right place. I have to say that's one of the things that the kids don't get right the first time around. Usually the girth is going clear around the middle of the belly instead of by the girth area. So knowing how something fits, if you're using a rider, rider figure, then you need to make sure the rider's in correct position as well. And then positioning the horse in the proper place. So going to a fence, I don't know if any of you jump, but you know that there's a certain takeoff point. So if it's about a 3-foot fence, you're going to take off about 3 feet in front of the fence.
So if they tip in, they get in trouble.
Exactly. If a lot of kids will put their model with the nose right at the fence. Well, you know that that's a disaster about to happen. So they have
Find your distances.
Well, exactly. They have to know how to position the horse correctly for the particular class. And if, because they're obviously immobile plastic models, if the horse is, say, standing and you want to put them in a jumper class, then they'll usually put a little note in front of the model that says, awaiting for the signal that I can start my canter circle to then begin, you know, the class. And so then that model will be judged on the correctness of everything from the tack to the rider to, you know, just the appropriate fence for that particular class that they called out. So there's a lot to learn, but it's really fun to understand because there's so many different disciplines that, you know, you can show your horses in.
That is so much more complicated than what I did in drawing an arena in the carpet of my bedroom when I was a kid. I love my Briars, but I really love when you do the kind of famous horses. Like I just saw Teddy O'Connor's online, which now I have to get tattooed, but I've been really craving a Zenyatta model because she's pretty special. But I went on to Briar's website, and they're all sold out. How do I
know?
Because on eBay, they're like $1 million.
Well, there is more coming, but I have to say, you know, when you work here and you're trying to anticipate supply, demand, you know, all of those things, and you look into your crystal ball and say, okay, how many do we need to order? And then you work with manufacturing and say, okay, how many can you produce by this time? It's all a juggling act. So it's never easy to try to, get as much in stock with as soon as you need it. But yeah, Zenyatta, I mean, what a great mare. I mean, she's just phenomenal. And her effort in the Breeders' Cup Classic was just amazing. And the owners have been so much fun to work with. And they're really thrilled with the Zenyatta Briar model, and we are too. So we'll definitely have more coming in, but I think it's going to be in January before we get the rest of our inventory filled.
Now, the Zenyatta
Jamie,
model.
Believe me, they wish they had ordered about 10,000 more.
Now, I know
there's
lots of really cool accessories that Briar makes.
Mm-hmm.
There's little tiny hay bales and water buckets and stuff like that because it's part of the culture. Can you get a little tiny Guinness bottle for Zenyatta?
Well, we have to be a little careful about
that.
Exactly.
You have to alter your soda pop bottle.
I know. It's really fun. Yeah, we have everything from barns to blankets to and it's what's fun too is we even affiliate with some of the real organizations, like our vet doll is approved by, you know, the American Academy of Equine Practitioners, and our farrier doll is approved by the Farriers Association, and so it's really
right
kind of fun.
All right, so I do have a question for you. I know when we go to Briar Fest, because we live about 4 miles from the horse park, so we go, you know, we get over there. And it's interesting to see the people that are at Briar Fest, the thousands of people that are at Briar Fest.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, have you ever done a study on how many of the people who collect Briars are actually horse people?
We have had various surveys over the years through our magazine, Just About Horses, which actually will be going into its 35th year of continuous publication next year. I would say generally it's been about say 50%, about half of the people, are either owners or they ride regularly. And then the rest of our collectors are, you know, enthusiasts who get out to trail ride or to take lessons as often as they can, but aren't necessarily doing it on a weekly basis. So there's I would say a good half of everyone who collects is also extremely involved, whether they own a couple of horses or they are, you know, riding and taking lessons and competing on a regular basis.
Wow, this is, I'm learning all kinds of cool stuff about this. So how many, you were talking about the original mold, that the tack was actually molded as part of the figurine.
Mm-hmm.
How many different molds, because a mold is what makes that exact shape of animal, how many
right.
different molds are there right now? Because obviously every so often you make a new one.
Right, right. Yeah, I would say we probably all told have between 400 and 500, if you include everything from the traditional line that we call our 1/9 scale horses, which we have the most sculptures of. And then we also have smaller sizes, which include our 3-inch high stable mates. And then we even have tiny little pony gals that are 1/64 scale, like micro minis. So probably, I actually haven't done a count lately, but it probably is that many, because we do have so many different breeds represented, and we also have a variety of animals. I mentioned we don't currently produce them ourselves, but you can find them on the secondary market of the North American wildlife and the livestock, bulls, and we had a pig, and
and now they're going to have a reindeer after our last story.
you mentioned the stablemate variety. I do want to let you know, and I'll send it to you so you believe me, that I used the jumping horse as my wedding cake topper this past year.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Well, you know, it is amazing. I imagine, you know, people who are involved certainly with the horse world are really into, they know about us, and they make suggestions for all kinds of things, including we have gotten suggestions to make official cake toppers. And
really?
Well, we do make holiday ornaments already, but we've gotten suggestions to make horse lamps and Christmas tree toppers and, you know, cake mix decorating kits and, you know, anything equine themed. So it's a lot of fun. We get so much feedback from our collectors and enthusiasts, and, you know, they tell us what they like and what they don't like, and make suggestions for new horses, as well as proposing their own horses. It's really cute, especially when you get a kid who's like, my pony Charlie wants to be a Briar model, and you're thinking to yourself, I would love to make Charlie, but I just can't make every horse. You know, it's too bad.
How do you get your horse to be a Briar model? I mean, we just talked to Templeton Thompson yesterday, whose horse is a Christmas Briar this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the process for that?
Well, we internally, of course, do a lot of research. We get about 35 different equestrian publications, everything from the Chronicle of the Horse to Quarter Horse Journal to, Saddlebred publications, Arabian publications, et cetera. So we try to keep an eye on what's going on, what are the trends in the horse industry, and who's hot and who's not, and, you know, all those types of things, as well as we have a close relationship with the breed associations, and so they kind of keep us informed on horses that they would love to see us make. And then we also, of course, get lots and lots of suggestions and proposals. So if someone feels that their horse would make a great model, they can send in a proposal outlining what those characteristics are and highlights of the horse's career or great story or whatever the case may be, as well as sending some photos in. And we evaluate those on a regular basis when we're looking at developing a particular product line. And, again, because we get so many suggestions, we can't make every one that comes in, but we do try to choose horses based on if, you know, a horse like Zenyatta, for example, was a bit of a given because she's just phenomenal and, you know, and unprecedented, really, in her winning streak. But we also will do horses that just have a great story. We've done, for example, horses that were rescues by the Hooved Animal Humane Society and went on to, you know, just become either a great lesson horse or a great kids horse or a great show horse or, you know, whatever the case may be, and tells a great story of overcoming adversity. But we'll also do different breed representatives. So even though something like, say, a Fjord or a Hackney Pony are less well known, particularly in the States here, and maybe not as popular, we still want to bring those different breeds to light and to tell stories about them as well. So we may have a particular individual from that particular breed. And, you know, again, the breed may not be known nationally, but we definitely want to make sure we have a broad representation in the line. So it's all of those things, as well as, you know, if there are Hollywood films or, you know, fictional horses that, you know, are things that people want to see.
Right. So we are talking with Stephanie, the Vice President for Marketing and Product Development for Briar Horses. So she's a big wig in the Briar world. And I have to know, what exactly is the most popular Briar ever? And then how many do you guys sell a year?
Wow. That's a tough question. We sell over 1 million models a year. But what is the most popular one ever is a huge – that's a tough question. I would say right now, certainly Zenyatta and Secretariat are topping the list because they are very topical. Secretariat with the movie having just been released, and Zenyatta with her popularity. And the one thing about racehorses, they transcend into the mainstream population. You know, if you ask someone just, you know, on the street, do you know who Sapphire is? They don't know that she's a double gold medalist show jumper. But if you say, do you know who Secretariat is? They say, oh, yeah. So we find that the racehorses that get published in national media tend to be well known and do very well for us. But by the same token, you know, a horse like Sapphire, the show jumper, will do very, very well as well, but is certainly more targeted to people in the know in that particular discipline. Overall, it's
best-selling
really,
ever.
Ever? Well, what's also difficult is that a horse like Misty of Chincoteague has been in our line for over 40 years.
She's the best.
I guess if you were to say just for longevity and, you know, new generations of kids discovering the book every year and you know, just the lifelong love of Margaret Henry's stories, probably Misty would be one of the top.
Okay.
Pieces. It would have to be.
Yeah.
Because she's still here with us and definitely an evergreen piece in the line.
Well, so which one of all of them, and I'll dig through my collection so I can see, you know, I'm certainly not selling a Briar of mine ever, but see, which ones are the most valuable? So what is the most valuable one you guys have made?
Well, I would have to say that I believe it was 1962, Briar decided at the time to do some decorative pieces, and in fact they were called the Decorator Series, and they were in the colors of blue and gold and blue and gold dapple. And those particular pieces were not well received at the time they were released. And in fact, Briar sold very few of them, relatively speaking, and they are the most rare pieces to find. So, and the colors were called Copenhagen, Wedgwood, Gold Charm, and Florentine. And those particular pieces generally command in the several thousand dollars if you can find them in mint condition.
Holy
because
cow.
It has been so long. So that is, those are some of the most rare pieces that you can find. The single piece that is the most valuable is 2 years ago at Briarfest, we made an Andalusian stallion that was very, very popular, but part of the promotion for Briarfest is that we were making that model for Briarfest only, and then we were going to break the tool. And we literally, our actual injection molded tools weigh about 2,000 pounds, so they're huge. They weigh about the size of a draft horse. And So we weren't able to actually bring the mold and break it at Briarfest, but we did have photographs of the process in which the model, the mold was destroyed. And in our auction, we had a single piece. We have a benefit auction at Briarfest every year that benefits both animal and youth charities. In fact, Briar has donated over $500,000 in cash to the likes of North American Riding for the Handicapped, St. Jude's Children's Hospital, and a myriad other organizations over the years. And so this particular benefit auction is very popular. We generally have about 25 to 30 auction lots, and they're test runs. They're pieces that we've made a special color on but then decided not to put it in our production line. And on that Andalusian, though, we did specially create one of those in a sooty palomino, like a metallic palomino color. And in the auction, that went for
$13,500. Oh, my God.
Wow.
We were just, it was just amazing, and we were just thrilled because the charities got a little extra that year, and that particular piece was really just, you know, incredible. And and the person
wow.
who bought it was just really, really thrilled, and it was crazy, but it was an awful lot of fun.
Well, now there's a subculture around Briars too, and that's what Jennifer used to do. Is she the whole subculture that buys the blanks and paints their own? That is a huge thing for you guys, isn't it?
Right. Well, and actually, you can repaint pretty much any one of our pieces. The material that a Briar model is made out of is called cellulose acetate, and that's also part of the quality and the value and the expense of a Briar piece. It's a very high-grade plant-based plastic, and the decorative paints that we use are also acetone-based and acetate-based so that it adheres to, it becomes part of the plastic. And that makes it also very easy, though, if you want to repaint and redecorate your models and paint them either in acrylics or oils. It's easy to sand to ensure a smooth surface. It's easy to apply a primer and then paint an airbrush or hand brush in the acrylics or oils. In fact, some people will even take a Dremel tool and take off the plastic mane and tail and put on a mohair mane and tail for realism. and because of the cellulose acetate, you can also heat the plastic and some of our artists are very much into repositioning the piece, which this material allows them to do. So there is this whole group of artists who customize Briar models, either repositioning them, repainting them, adding the hair manes and tails, either for themselves to make it look like their horse or a horse they'd love to have, or also, yeah, for something that they do for others, and they buy, sell, and trade their customized pieces. And in fact, what's really fun about this is the fact that a couple of our artists, our sculptors, started off customizing Briar models. And they learned conformation, they learned the difference between all the breeds, and now they sculpt for us. Sue Sifton is one of them, Kathleen Moody is another, but they started out with their Briar model customizing and then learned the craft from there and started to make their own from the ground up.
That is so cool.
I'm looking on eBay. I know. I'm looking on eBay right now, but that Briarfest Briar, the Andalusian, you mm-hmm. can get it for a buy it now price of $100. But that one's gorgeous, and that's actually the horse that I want, like, in real life. So I may have to bid on that one, too.
I know. Well, that was the Dapple Gray was the one that was available to everyone who purchased a ticket to Briarfest that year. And then it was that Palomino, though, that was a single, you know, one-off color that was used for the auction. But the Dapple Grays, I forget how many people came to Briarfest this year, I mean that year, but it was somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000 people. So it was really exciting.
Now, something that I thought was really interesting, the first year I got to go to the Briarfest out at the horse park, unfortunately, I was a very bad Briar owner. I was the kid who played hard with my Briars and broke all their legs.
Oh, no, that's a good Briar owner. You have to enjoy them. If you can't enjoy them, what's the point?
Yeah, they ran hard and jumped hard and broke them all. But I never realized how much Briar does with the Briar Fest with real horses.
Yeah.
There are demos, and there's famous horses and riders everywhere. It's really cool.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, we're inspired by the real horse. I mean, that's all there is to it. And so at Briarfest, especially for people who are not necessarily exposed to horses every day, but and that's why they have decided to collect, we want to make sure to bring the horse world to them at Briarfest. And we probably have about 200 horse guests, all the different breeds and disciplines represented. And, yeah, and we make it into a big festival where Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that covered arena at the horse park is just full of demonstrations and drill teams and instructionals and all kinds of things. It's really a festival. It's fun. It's active. There's things going on all the time. And then for someone who really loves their models and wants to learn how to apply a hair, mane, and tail, or how to repaint their piece, and what's the difference between, you know, a Red Dun and a Grulia and a, you know, a Bay Roan, et cetera, we've got classes for that. We usually have between 30 and 40 classes that people can sign up in advance for, whether it's an hour to 2 hours of instructionals with their models. And we provide all the materials. They come, they learn. And then they move on to the next thing at Briarfest. So it's been really great because the other thing is all of our a lot of our hobbyists, our collectors, want to share what they've learned over the years with others. I mean, it's just like you put two horse people in a room and they start talking horses. I mean, it doesn't matter if somebody owns a Pasofino and the other one owns a Thoroughbred. I mean, you're talking horses. It's the same thing at Briarfest. Everybody gets talking and our hobbyists, we probably have about 100 volunteers at Briarfest every year. And what they do, they teach these classes. They run the hobby information booth. So if someone wants to understand what the heck is a model horse show, we've got people who can explain it, show them, take them up to the show, because we do have a couple of shows going on during Briarfest as well. And so there's just a lot of things to do, whether it's model horse or real horse. And then we have our trade show. And then at night, people go back to the Holiday Inn North. And literally the 300 rooms at the Holiday Inn are full of Briar collectors who have their rooms open and they have their models for sale. In fact, it's really funny because a lot of them put signs on the doors and say, you know, house cleaner, please do not enter my room. You know, I'm fine. Just change the towels. Because they've lined the walls of the hotel room with Briar models on show.
That's amazing. Stephanie, we're definitely going to have to take our morning show. I know we're going to broadcast live from Rolex, so we're going to have to broadcast live from the Briar Fest. And
oh, absolutely.
I don't think I've ever talked to anybody so incredibly passionate and knowledgeable about Briars other than you. And unfortunately, we've run out of time. But, you know, I hope we can get you back on again if you have a special run or at least to maybe promote Briar Fest coming up. That would be great. So do you mind if we call you back?
That would be great. In fact, Briarfest is going to be July 15th through the 17th in 2011 at the Kentucky Horse Park. And for more information, just go to www.briarhorses.com.
I love it. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie. You have a Merry Christmas.
You too. Take care now.
Bye.
All right. And then exactly. I've learned more about Briars than I ever thought I'd ever know. She was very passionate about it and very informative. And now I know that I'm pretty much screwed trying to get Zenyatta.
she didn't offer to send you one. I noticed you trying, but she didn't offer. You were out of luck there.
I know. It wasn't even going to happen. Well, we're going to get the Horse Health Report on with thehorse.com. We're going to talk to Christy and Dr. Jones here in a minute, but we need to take a break and check the news with Chris.
This is the Horse Radio Network News. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management has been told by federal inspectors that it needs to step up its research into population control methods for wild horses. The new report by the Interior Department's Office of Inspector General found that there is a need for an urgent and aggressive focus on research and testing of improved population control methods to reduce the need for additional holding facilities and preserves. This latest instruction is designed to help curb the spiraling costs of rounding up the mustangs across the West and housing them in holding facilities. The Office of Inspector General said it observed roundups this year in Nevada, Oregon, and California and visited several holding facilities, and it found no evidence of inhumane treatment of animals. The office concluded the roundups are necessary to cull the overpopulated herds, which take a toll on the health of the range as their population naturally double about every 4 years. The BLM manages more than 38,000 wild horses and burros in 180 different herd management areas, covering about 32 million acres in 10 western states. Another 38,000 are in holding facilities in Kansas, Oklahoma, and South Dakota. The Canadian Horse Defense Coalition has learned that Bovary Exports Horse Slaughter Plant in Fort McLeod, Alberta, closed operations on December 3rd to complete renovations related to sanitation. It is well documented that horse slaughter operations in Canada and the U.S. have a long history of pollution troubles and violations. It was due to sanitation and food safety concerns that Natural Valley Farms in Saskatchewan was closed by the CFIA in December 2008. The now-defunct Saskatchewan horse slaughter plant closed its business shortly thereafter. In Texas, the Dallas Crown plant was ordered closed for pollution and sewer violations. The Calvin plant in Illinois had similarly been in violation of its sewer discharge limits before its closure. And on a brighter note, at the Geneva International Horse Show last week, McLean Ward and Antares F won the Credit Suisse Grand Prix. With Sapphire, Ward finished sixth in the International Jumping Riders Club Rolex Top 10 Final. And in the Netherlands at the Hengelo's CSI Two-Star Show, Peter Wilds won the Anemone Young Horse Class with Zidane, and 2 days later in the Young Horse Final, Wild and Zidane took another win, narrowly beating out Dutch rider Chantal Richter and Eurocommerce Philadelphia. And at the Palm Beach International Equestrian Center, Kent Farrington won the $25,000 Year-End Awards Grand Prix aboard Van Hatten. Charlie Jane and Mannequin de Corrie were second, and Catherine Passmore and My Boy finished third. And that's all the news this Wednesday morning. For the Horse Radio Network, I'm Chris Stafford.
Ready?
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Horses are coming my way. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
Hi, Glenn the Geek with you here on Horses in the Morning, brought to you by Back on Track. I am with Jamie Jennings, who just had her fill of Briar, and I noticed we had a comment from Rebecca on Facebook that said, here, I sound like I'm 12 years old, who said, love the topic on Briar horses. I have like 20 of them myself, and I think if everybody was honest that's in the horse world, they probably started off with Briars. But we have I know. And we're going to have to find out from our guests coming up if they had Briars, too. So you're going to have to ask that question.
Absolutely. With us on the line is our weekly horse health report from thehorse.com. And Christy always handles this segment for us. And always joining us also is Dr. Jones in Florida. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How are you?
All right. Did you guys have Briar horses growing up?
Absolutely, I did. And, of course, I got my older sister's broken horses, too, which was terrible. She broke their legs, and I couldn't fix them back then. I could probably do a better job nowadays, but back then I had to play with three-legged horses and my own Briar horses that I used to get.
All right, Dr. Jones, my man-o-war has a fractured leg that happened actually in an earthquake. He fell off the shelf, fractured his leg, and can I just send him to you, and you can go ahead and patch him up for me?
I certainly will.
Christy, did you have Briar horses too?
Oh, of course. I still have a big box full of them.
Okay, gotcha. You're kind of hard to hear.
I used to break them too. Oh, I'm sorry. I used to break them too, but my dad, being an engineer, had this super strong heat shrink tubing that he'd drop over their legs and put a little torch on. That actually worked really well.
Nifty idea.
I love it. So I guess the one thing you don't have to do with a Briar horse is vaccinate it, thank goodness. Save you a little bit of money, but we're going to talk about vaccines today. So Christy, if you want to go ahead and take it and try to talk up just a little bit louder.
Okay. I can yell a little bit. our first thing we wanted to do was go through a little bit of just how vaccines work, just to give us a little bit of basics for this discussion. Dr. Jones, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Without getting too technical, there's two cells, helper T cells, helper B cells, that we activate with the vaccine. So what that all means is they're part of the immune system of the horse's body as well as our body. And when you give a vaccine, it stimulates those cells to make antigens against or protectors against those diseases and helps the horse fend off those diseases. If that's as simple as I can make it. Boosting the immune system is the whole idea. And I want to just make a comment right off the bat that vaccine alone, though, is not sufficient for prevention of infectious diseases. We need to do other good management practices, things like that, so such as going to shows and not going nose-to-nose with horses that have snotty noses and getting your mosquito pools dumped out in the summertime, like your empty bucket, your buckets that are full of water that are not being used need to be dumped out. Old tires that might be filling up with water need to be dumped out. Run-out areas that are filling up with water need to be filled in with mud or dirt, that kind of thing. But that was my 2 cents worth. It's to boost the immune system in the horse, and each horse has a different level of immune system, just like the humans do.
So even with vaccine, they can still get a disease. But you can cut the risk of that, is what you're saying.
Yes. Vaccines are meant to increase the prevention, but if you don't take other risks or other prevention, the risk still will be elevated for your horse. If you live in the swamp here in Florida is my best example. When West Nile broke out, we actually had West Nile vaccine fairly quickly, which we're all blessed about having that here in the United States. When we started to vaccinate some of these horses, some were still getting the West Nile disease because they lived in the swamp, they had no barn to go into, and they were just getting covered by mosquitoes. They're age-related. They were older horses. They were younger horses. Those are the ones we were seeing that were getting the disease in a severe fashion, even though they were being vaccinated.
So, in other words, for disease prevention, we really need to think about two different things. One is reducing the amount of challenge or exposure that your horse has to that disease by the things you're talking about, not going nose-to-nose with sick horses, reducing the mosquito pools. And then the vaccines are just another part of that to reduce, to enable your horse to fend off whatever disease he is exposed to.
Yes, basically vaccine alone in the absence of good management is not sufficient for prevention of the disease. You just can't rely on that vaccine.
Right. And there are a ton of vaccines out there. Which ones are considered to be the ones you got to have? Which are the core vaccines?
The AAEP has put out a recommendation for all veterinarians and horse owners, and you can go on the AAP.org website to see these. But the core vaccinations are the tetanus, eastern and western equine encephalomyelitis, West Nile virus, and rabies. Reason for that? All those can't be transferred to humans, or humans not transferred to them, but humans can get them. We can get rabies from a horse. West Nile and the encephalitis diseases we cannot get from the horse, but we can get from the mosquitoes that have affected our horse. So if your horse is in your backyard, comes down with encephalitis, that means there are mosquitoes carrying that virus in your backyard.
All right. And let's talk a little bit about vaccine reactions, because that's a question that we get very often. You know, does this particular vaccine cause a reaction more than another one? Does this one by this company cause it more often? What do I do if I see one? Let's talk a little bit about how common those are.
Vaccine reactions have not been common lately. They are actually less common now as opposed to 20 years ago when I started. They're more common back then. There is a significant difference from horse to horse and pharmaceutical company to pharmaceutical company in the fact that one horse may react severely bad, as in sweat and fever, to a particular company's vaccine but have no reaction to another one. Why is that? The vaccines are made with the killed virus most times, more times that than a modified live is the other type of vaccine. They're made with a killed virus, and what that virus does is it needs to be driven into the immune system by something they call an adjuvant. It's the driver that helps boost that immune system. And that adjuvant is different from company to company. That's why they're so unique when they market their vaccines. That is usually the reason the horses react. So let's go down to reactions. You'll usually see, if you're going to get a reaction at all, fever, swelling in that area, and then the worst case scenario would be an abscess in the area. Only abscesses I see lately, sorry guys, are when the owners are given the vaccine. I, in 20 years, have never seen an abscess on a horse that I vaccinated, unless they went to a different vet, but I don't think so because they're still all clients of mine from 20 years ago. But I have not seen a reaction from one that abscessed from one I gave. And I think it is where they gave it and how they gave it.
So that's the difference. That's what makes the owners create abscesses is where they gave it, like on a dirty location or in the wrong part of the muscle, what?
Both. Both. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The most recent one I have, and I've actually got video of it. We're trying to get it up on our website of us lancing it so people can see what it can come to, was one given between the muscle layers of the rear end of a horse. They never got it into the muscle. So this horse never got vaccinated because it never got into the bloodstream. And I don't say you give it IV or in the bloodstream, but it has to be in the muscle that can absorb up through the bloodstream the vaccine in order to prompt the immune response. This one was given between the two muscles in what we call the fascial plane and sat in there, fester. And it took almost 6 weeks for it to come to the surface and pop out. And that horse was pretty lame and pretty ouchy.
Ew!
Yeah, and that was given by the owner, and the owner was videotaping it and goes, oh, so you want this, doc, so you can put it on your website and tell clients, don't vaccinate your own horses, let me do it. And I said, absolutely. This is a good reason. She was really good about the whole thing. But yeah, absolutely. Given in the wrong area can cause abscesses.
Wow.
This is great.
Wow. Yeah.
This is going to be a great video to see after breakfast.
Yeah, it's one
yeah.
of those, kind of like that largest zit video that's on the YouTube. Yeah, you know, it's the same thing. Big pus pocket all flying out after we lance it. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Well, I don't know if you've seen the zit on YouTube, but there's one about the biggest zit on YouTube, and it's pretty disgusting.
Oh, yeah, I said that's gross.
I'm
kind of
happy to say I haven't seen that one.
Well, then you haven't lived, Christy. You got to see it.
Okay, I'll go do a search as soon as we're done with the show. So just for fun, how many of our readers on thehorse.com would you say, we did a poll on this, and just out of curiosity, how many do you think said that they have had a vaccine reaction in one of their horses, or one or more of their horses?
I'd say less than 50%.
Jamie, what about you?
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you, so ask that question again.
I'm sorry. I'm right on the microphone. I promise. Must have a bad connection. I just said, what would be your guess out of readers on thehorse.com? How many of them do you think have a horse that has reacted to a vaccine?
I would say, are we talking? We're not talking abscess. We're just talking. It could be
any
swelling
kind of
reaction. I would say 80% because I have 5 horses and one of them reacts.
That's a good measure. Actually, Aaron, you're right. You said under 50%. It was actually 48, so it was very close. 48.
Oh, good.
Darn. We're fine.
They can.
Danny, I recommend that you try a different company vaccine on your horse, honestly, because I've had to do that with a couple of my clients and go through. You know, there's 3 or 4 marketers of vaccines out there that you can go through and try their vaccine, each one on your horse, and see which one has less reaction.
Do you
right.
have a brand recommendation, or can you not say?
I don't think I should say here on radio. And also, I'd have to call them up immediately and ask them for some money for endorsing their product.
Oh, boy. I'm just curious.
We can talk on the side about that one.
There you go. Well, just for fun, too, we had about the same percentage of people, also 48%, who said they do their own vaccines.
I believe that that's probably up. If we would have done this poll last year, I think that's up from the last couple of years due to the economy. We see less vaccines appointments in my practice than we did in the last 2 years.
Sure.
We're still seeing the clients. We're still seeing them for other things, you know, foot abscess or, you know, occasional cough or something to that effect, but they're all doing their own vaccines now.
Right. Now, as far as which vaccines people are using, the most popular one among our readers, the one that's most commonly given, was tetanus at 90%.
Wow.
West Nile virus was actually right behind that at 89%. And let's see, Eastern Western Venezuelan encephalomyelitis at 86%. And then they start going down a little bit more, flu at 74%. Rabies at 68%, and equine herpes virus at 65%. So is that about what you'd recommend, or any of the diseases kind of underprotected against?
I'd like to make a comment on the rabies percentage, and I believe the problem with that is when I first got out, 20 years ago, was practicing, we didn't have a rabies vaccine for horses. We used the dog and cat one. So we really didn't know how much protection we were giving the horse, but they felt that it was doing a good job. So I think a lot of veterinarians were not on board with using the vaccine, the dog and cat vaccine, with horses.
So
that one was probably not as pushed as much.
Is it a different vaccine, or is it just a higher dose? Because, humans get rabies vaccines, too. Are all of these different, or is it just the kind of the killed virus in each one of them?
They're different in the way that they're driven into the immune system of the animal. And you have to consider rabies, and encephalitis is the other one. This probably rolls into another question you have, Christy, is that those can't really be tested. Because if you infect an animal with encephalitis, or you infect an animal with rabies, and test them to see if the vaccine, so let's say you got a group of controls and a group of those that have had the vaccine and you infect them with the disease to see if they come down with it, you still have to clean those stalls. So you have people in there at a risk of getting hurt or infected or something like that, cleaning stalls on horses that have been infected with rabies and encephalitis. Those are public health concerns that don't allow us to easily track the abilities of vaccines. So it makes it harder for them to test it on live animals except for our clinical experience, what we're doing out in the field. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, having personal experience with vaccine and not vaccine rabies horses. So when you give a horse a rabies vaccine, because I know here in Kentucky, rabies vaccine is sold over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
In Pennsylvania, where I'm from, it's not allowed. A vet has to administer the vaccine at all times.
Yes.
But there is available now a proper, quote, horse rabies vaccine.
Yes, there is.
That they still sell the dog one,
yes,
to be given to horses, that's really not the ideal situation because it is different.
Yes, and the horse vaccine is a 1 cc, 1 mL dose, and the other dogs and cats one are the 2 cc's. So they think doubling it up for the size of the animal is enough to prompt an immune response in the horse.
But there's really no scientific data that says that. It's just, okay, we're just going to make an extrapolation.
Clinical applications, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Okay. And
Most horses that get infected by rabies have never been vaccinated for rabies.
Okay, because I would recommend to people from personal experience, get your horse vaccinated for rabies and do it every single year.
I agree, because they don't want to have the disease, because it's a horrible disease to watch a horse have. But secondly, 9 times out of 10, those horses show up with a fever, and you're putting your hands in their mouth by giving them an antibiotic, and now you've just exposed yourself to rabies.
Well, that's kind of the storyline that I had, in that the horse was, we thought, exposed. The horse was exposed to a rabid animal, and there was nobody to see the exposure, so we didn't know what the risk factor was. The horse was like 2 weeks past the due date of her rabies vaccine.
Oh, my.
But by the time I found out all this information, I had been exposed to the animal, and other people in my family had been exposed to the animal, not knowing all this. So it was kind of a freaky-out, sweat-your-palms couple of weeks. It was not worth it.
Including me, by the way. I was
including
one of those
Glenn.
Other
Oh, no. Yeah, so that's one. Put that on your Road Apple applications. And put the reminder to get the rabies vaccine on there.
I agree.
I think we're all in agreement. All right, so I have a couple of questions. We're going to play stump Jamie and Glenn just for a moment. hopefully we're not stumping you.
That won't be hard.
we're going to start with a little bit easier one. Can you tell us, do you know what a Coggins is?
Yes.
Yes.
It's a blood test for
Yes. You can't just say yes. That's cheating.
All right, Glenn, you want to go or you want me to go?
Yeah, it's a piece of paper that horse husbands know that you have to go to horse shows.
I love it.
Oh, that's right, isn't
that's awesome.
It? I mean, I'm right.
It's like a driver's license, right? It allows them to get into the show.
Exactly, and then we get blamed if you don't have it because you were supposed to bring it and we were supposed to know that you were supposed to have it. So you learn that very early on when you're a horse husband. You have to have that Coggins test, and you're responsible even though you don't know anything about it.
Yeah,
that was a good
answer. Okay. Follow that up. I mean, I was going to give you the real answer, but I can't follow that, so, you know, move on.
Well, Christy, if you don't mind, I'm going to share the story that I talked to you about earlier. And
it's
I had a client call me, and, you know, he's an older gentleman. He's been into horses just a little bit of time, and he loves his pasture pets. They're just pasture pets. And he acquired two donkeys, and he got them from some rescue place of some sort. And he talked to me about coming out and getting the vaccines done. I said, great. I said, do they come with a Coggins? And he said, no, but I said, well, you really should have their Coggins done. And he said, well, you inoculated my other two horses for Coggins, so, you know, my horses should be fine. And I said, no, it's not a vaccine. It's a blood test, the test for an immune-deficient disease that is transferred by stable flies. So if you put two horses in the same pasture with your two horses, the flies will jump from one horse to the other very easily and transfer that disease. He got a little nervous, and I was out there the next day pulling the Coggins.
So he thought it was actually a vaccine, not just a test to see if the horse had equine infectious anemia.
Exactly.
So that's why we threw that into the show. We want to make sure that that's clear for everybody. And yes, Glenn, you're absolutely right. That paper is very, very important. But I didn't know what it was. Okay, so for our next question.
I knew
question.
That.
You did. You're awesome.
I need to add that to Horse Husbands 101 class, though. That's a good point. I need to write that down.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right, Christy, I think we have time for one more.
That's all I got, so we're good. What is a titer? Do you know?
Glenn, do you have a funny answer for this one?
None that I can say on the air.
A titer would be, like, to get a titer, say, if you're trying to see... Okay, to get more specific, a friend of mine has never vaccinated her horses for, I think, rhino, because if she is to move down to Portugal or wherever she wants to go and move with her horses, they take blood titers to see if there's any of that vaccine, rhino, in her blood. Now, of course, it could be exposure or the vaccine, and so you check the titers, right, and that's check their blood to see how much is in the system. That
yes.
a dumb answer.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Basically, it shows how much immune response the horse got from either exposure to the disease or the vaccine. The unfortunate side to it is that we have not created the levels, or not created, but studied the levels that are proper for a horse to have. So if somebody wants me to pull titers, which is a common question from my homeopathic clientele, is they want titers pulled to see if their horse has enough protection for the encephalitis disease, especially here in Florida. There is nothing to say that 20, 200, or 2,000 is the cutoff. We don't have enough data to say your horse is fully protected. If it's zero, you can say it's not protected at all. But if it's 20, 200, 2,000, we really can't determine that is enough of a response for your particular horse to prompt a response if they were challenged with that disease, such as a mosquito bite, to pass the encephalitis. So that's I just wanted to clarify that titers are not commonly used yet in equine. If somebody wants to sponsor that, I'm sure there's plenty of internal medicine people who would love to have their foundation money to research that.
And there's another answer. There's another answer for titers, and that is, it's a Christmas answer, actually, because you're eating a whole lot of cookies this time of year, and your jeans just don't fit because they're tighter.
Okay.
All right, we got to end it here, guys.
You should have ended with the yellow piece of paper, Glenn.
I know. It would have been much better. Well, thank you.
Jamie, I'd like to just throw in that my Briar Vet, female Briar Vet, could probably take care of your man-o-war horse any day of the week. So if you want to send over your briar horses, my female briar vet could probably vaccinate them for you.
You know what? I'll send him over in my briar horsey hospital, my briar horse trailer, and drive him on down to Florida.
Sounds great.
You know, Dr. Jones, what's funny is you could probably make more money nationally repairing briar horses than what you're currently doing.
I agree. I probably could.
Okay, kicked either.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't get bit or kicked.
Thank you, Christy. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones, both from thehorse.com. We appreciate you guys being on with us every week and educating us into the ways of horse health. And you definitely are doing that for me, because being a horse husband, I just learn. The only thing I know is what I hear. So it's been a big help, and we appreciate you being on with us.
Well, thanks
you
so much, and I just wanted to let you know you can thank Jennifer for the stump the chump routine. That was her suggestion.
I think you should do that every week. It's kind of fun. All right, guys.
Oh,
I'll see you later.
We'll do that. Okay, let me throw on one more thing real quick. I got just 10 seconds. We're going to do a show here in a few weeks on crazy farm calls. So any of the equine vets out there, I know you have some really great crazy farm call stories. Please send them to me at cmwest@thehorse.com. We'll talk about them on the air. Please go ahead and change the names to protect the innocent if you like. We'd love to hear them.
All right,
awesome.
And we'll put a message out on our pages, too, for that, because I know we do have some vets in the audience, and we have some friends that are vets, so we'll definitely do that.
Cool. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. Have a good day.
Great
day. Bye.
Well, there you go. Everything you wanted to know about vaccines.
That was a hoot.
Absolutely. Glenn, oh my gosh, that was so funny. What is a Coggins? We're going to stump Glenn. Well, that's a yellow piece of paper that you get in trouble for if you don't. And I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like, do we have the Coggins? We don't have the Coggins. No!
It's always our fault for some reason. It's either dad's fault or husband's fault. It's our fault that you didn't bring the Coggins.
Yeah. It absolutely is, and I'm glad you understand that and you realize that.
Important. You better watch it. Your dad's going to be calling in here shortly. I'm sure he's been down that road. And how many of us, every one of us, has gone to a horse show or gone someplace where we needed the Coggins and don't have it? We've all done it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. So
it never
fails. That's one. You know what's interesting here in Arizona, that you don't need because I guess we haven't had the outbreak that has been over on the East Coast. You actually don't have to have a Coggins to travel in state with your horse. Isn't that crazy?
That is odd.
Yeah, that is odd.
I talked with just my yearly appointment. I said to the vet, I said, well, I need to go ahead and, you know, because it was just part of the routine, get the vaccines and the Coggins done. And they said, oh, no, you don't need a Coggins unless you're traveling out of state. And I was like, what? You mean horses can just come and go as they please from farm to farm without a Coggins test unless you get cross the state line, which in case you have to get the Coggins and the health certificate.
I think it works that way everywhere, though. I think it's a case of the receiving facility, the one you pull into, can decide whether or not you need to have a Coggins test.
Yeah, but every place I competed in Georgia and every place in Kentucky, you know, you pull into the horse park,
you got to
have your Coggins test. You pull into Wills Park north of Atlanta in Alpharetta, Georgia, just at school, you have to have that piece of paper with you just in case anybody asks.
Yeah, like I think across the street at Masterson, I don't think they have that rule because there's nobody to check.
Yeah.
You know, there's no gate, so to speak. Like, if you went to a state park and went trail riding, they don't require it because there's nobody to check.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure
but that's something
it's required,
to keep in mind when you go to public venues where you can ride your horse, that there is a significant possibility that there will be other animals there that have not been tested and to intermingle with unknown horses appropriately.
So speaking of Coggins and horse health and all of that, none of that will even matter unless you're feeding your horse correctly. And there is a company that helps you do that, and that is FeedXL. If you're not sure, you're just not quite sure if you're feeding your horse right or if you're giving them too much supplement or too little supplement or too much of this or too much of that, you want to stop over to FeedXL. It'll take you a couple minutes just to put all your information in about your horse, and all the information about what you're feeding your horse, from hay to grain to everything that you're putting in your horse's mouth, they want to know about. They take all of that information, they crunch it all together, and their equine nutritionists, their doctors of equine nutrition, have put together a program that will spit out a complete report on what you're feeding your horse, whether you're feeding too much of this, too little vitamin, maybe too much vitamin C, too much vitamin D, not enough of just roughage. It takes all of that into consideration, and it prints it out in charts and graphs, and it's very easy to understand. It's well worth stopping over to feedxl.com and taking the couple minutes that it takes to put in that information and see if you're feeding your horse correctly. That's feedxl.com. Well, guys, we're at the end of another, you know, Wednesdays always go quick because we always have, well, I mean, how cool was it to have Wrangler Bob on? We had the Briar people on. Jamie, you sounded like you were a little kid again. It was so cute. I was just sitting back here smiling.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm just such a fan. I mean, I'm sorry. Every little girl, Glenn. That's why you think it's so interesting that I was so excited. It's because I'm a girl, and I like horses. Every horse girl likes Briars.
That's true. It was interesting. I thought the interesting figure there, too, was how many are actually horse people. Because we were over at the one day we were watching some of the demonstrations at Briar Fest, and we were surrounded because the place is packed. And it was interesting how many of the girls that were around us, they had never touched a horse or seen a horse before, yet they were avid Briar collectors. So I was actually kind of surprised that the number was as high as 50%.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. I guess it's their the opportunity, you know, as you get as close to horses as you can when you have the fever that I call horses.
I just felt validated that there were some other kid in the world that broke all the legs off their Briars. You know, like, oh, I wasn't the only one running them too hard.
And you know that 50%, boy, I'll tell you what. And then the other question to ask, and I'm sure there's not been a study of this, would have been of horse girls, what percentage actually owned Briars? And I bet you that's 100%. Because look at today, all the girls on the show today owned Briars. Every one of them that we talked to, you know. So that's interesting. Very interesting. Well, we're going to be back again tomorrow with some more fantastic guests. We thank everybody for joining us today. We thank Wrangler Bob, dear Wrangler Bob, for getting up so darn early to join us. And, you know, he's become a celebrity, and he didn't even want to. We have Stephanie from the Vice President of Briar Horses. And, of course, we had the Horse Health Report from thehorse.com. You can listen to all of our shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And we're also on Twitter.
Of course, we're still accepting your nominations for the 2010 Hottest Horseman. And I believe we're going to have a little bit of chat about that, some nominations coming in tomorrow. So we'll talk to them, and we will be back 9 a.m. Eastern. So if you miss any of these, you can listen to the recorded version on our website, affiliate websites, iTunes. You don't have to miss an episode, and we won't. So say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you again tomorrow. Have a fantastic day, and ride safely.